resume the hearing. And just before I pass over to the rest of the panel for questions, I've just got a few matters I'd like to ask you about. And you're correct in terms of your paragraph 5 provides a nice summary of the key issues from reading, so I just want to address that. So starting with clause B at the top of page 2. So in terms of the reconsenting of the NPS, we fully understand the issue that you brought to our attention. And in fact, two of the appendices to your legal submissions were decisions from Canterbury that Commissioner Allison and I were involved with, one of them on referral back from the High Court. So I think that gives you an indication of certainly the thinking in that region on that issue. I do have some questions from Ms. White on some of the matters of control, which I think in your legal submissions you correctly identified as being very important. So, but I'll deal with those with Ms. White when we come to here, but we certainly understand the issue being raised.
Thank you.
In terms of the point you raise at your subclause C, we, in answer to our questions to the officers, they have confirmed to us that the catchment is fully allocated and not over-allocated, so we're clear in our minds on that issue. We're also clear in our minds that the stream, the groundwater hydraulically connected stream depletion provisions of the plan are such that unless there is a low degree of hydraulic connection, then you have to comply with the surface water allocation. In that catchment, in your catchment, that is full. So groundwater takes that have a moderate or higher degree of hydraulic connection simply couldn't be granted. And we're clear on that in our minds too. And we think that's what the plan says.
Yeah.
Now, we agree that the appendix that deals with stream depletion, that little table, can be simplified and clarified, and we've been putting our minds to that already. But we understand the intent of the plan as notified with as I just described it, and as you have outlined to us.
Okay,
so we're clear on that as well. I wanted to ask you about Appendix A. So have you got the first page of Appendix A?
Yes, I do.
We've had a number, step back a bit, so we also understand that Appendix E is a rollover from the existing plan, and that the parameters weren't altered, and that it is an interim or a holding position pending the setting of MPSFM compliant limits for water quality parameters under the FMU limit setting process. The council's notified a staged implementation program for that. That'll have to run its course, which will be very interesting in these elections. Other submitters have asked us in the meantime to alter some of the parameters in Appendix C, and my response to them has been, as a panel, we may be reluctant to do that because we don't want to preempt that limit setting process. And if Appendix E had, if the council had been desirous to amend Appendix E now, it would have done that. When it notified the plan, it didn't. It said, we'll just put it out there as it is now, sort of hold the line until we go through that limit setting process. So what I wanted to raise with you, in terms of the issues that's been identified in the evidence, it appears to me that there's two issues that have been raised, a minor one and a more major one. And so, do you see on Appendix C, the second paragraph, where it says the standard for a given parameter will not apply, blah, blah, blah?
Yes.
I think it's in your evidence, the point's made that some of the parameters aren't arranged, they're just a one number. So I think that issue can be addressed quite easily by removing the words outside the range and just using words along the lines of cannot meet the standard.
Yes.
And
yeah.
That then takes that issue out of play.
That's an easy one, sure.
Yeah. And the other point you make is that not only the NPS but potentially other established and authorised significant infrastructure does alter the natural flows, and that may on occasion prevent the parameters in Appendix E being met. That's a physical reality, and because the infrastructure is authorised, then that's how it's going to be. So rather than going in and altering individual parameters in Appendix E, I was wondering if you'd given consideration to just amending that paragraph that we're looking at, and maybe splitting it up into two components. The first one would deal with the natural causes issue, and there might be a second clause that would read something along the lines of, due to the effects of authorised critical infrastructure that alters natural flows, comma, that parameter cannot meet the standard. So it acknowledged that where there is critical infrastructure, and we've had submissions from territorial authorities and others asking us to insert a definition of critical infrastructure into the plan, the MPS would definitely meet that definition of critical infrastructure. And so right up front, we just acknowledge that in those cases where that infrastructure is authorised, at times the parameters might not be able to meet the standard for that reason. That would then acknowledge the issue you've raised without us having to go in and alter the Appendix E parameters at this stage, which, as I said, I might be reluctant to do because we've had different submitters asking us to move in different ways.
Do you want to respond?
Yeah, if you can respond to that one.
Yeah, I think that's probably not too far away from what Meridian was seeking. I don't think there was any particular appetite to ask the panel to sort of delve into the numbers in, because we understand how it is that Appendix E is there. We understand why that's happened, and we understand there's a process to go through so that in a few years' time, for each of your FMUs, you'll have properly thought through, you know, and the right standards will be in place. So this is kind of a rollover and a holding pattern. And it was really the acknowledgement that we have got, in the case of the MPS, you've got an existing lawful activity which contributes to, it has a major impact on the catchment, and it contributes to the water quality there, both positively and negatively in terms of some of these parameters, so it's not always a one-way street.
Yeah.
But really just to give comfort that these numbers, some of which are actually tougher than the MPS FM, aren't going to bite. In the meantime, that's really the concern. So the approach that you're taking, Mr. Chairman, is and I'm sure others of my witnesses might have something to say about it, but it appears to me to be quite attractive and would resolve that issue.
Yeah, and I put it to you because I was just interested from a legal perspective what your response would be.
Well, I suppose you need to be quite careful in terms of what kinds of things you describe as the exceptions.
Yeah.
So whatever critical infrastructure is, and I can understand from local authorities' point of view in terms of, you know, community water supply or whatever the things are that they're concerned about, there'll be boundaries, no doubt, in your mind as to what would qualify and what wouldn't, and that would need to be addressed with some care.
Yeah. But it's sort of, well, it's good to hear. A response along those lines would probably make it easier. Then the next thing I wanted to ask you about was the point you raise at your clause E, the existing environment issue. Now, I was commissioner at first instance on that Rata Heap decision, which you're probably aware of. It's probably why you put it in the submissions and the evidence.
No, well, I wasn't actually, but at least I did now. I think we'll wait and see how the question goes.
I've also been involved in the reconsenting of the Tongariro Power Development Scheme in the North Island, and also Māori River Power, now Mercury's Waikato River System, so I'm familiar with the issue of the existing environment. Fully understand how the argument that the structures can be considered part of the existing environment, because you need consents to remove them even if the scheme was declined, which is the point you made. What I'm more unsure about is why the takes and discharges that those structures cause would be considered part of the existing environment, because that would mean upon reconsenting, there'd be limited opportunity to depart from the status quo in terms of those takes and discharges. And certainly my understanding of the TPD and the Māori River Power System on the Waikato River is that the structures were considered part of the existing environment, but the takes and discharges weren't.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting topic, and I think it does probably depend upon the facts of each scheme in terms of its physical alteration, I suppose, of the environment that is caused. One of the factors that is always in my mind is that, and I fully accept what you say about the physical structures, you can't do anything about them, they're sort of in the environment and they're permitted and there's always an extent to which the mere presence of those structures causes hydraulic alteration anyway.
Yeah.
So you're already partway down the track in terms of accepting that there's some change to the what would have been the pre-scheme environment that we're going to have to take account of in a water and discharge sense anyway. Another aspect is and I think this is quite significant, is the issue of can you realistically understand the environment in a pre-scheme sense to kind of make sense of in a detailed way, to make sense of the effects. And so it seems to be that often what happens in these big schemes is that you end up with the assessment is of the relative effects of different flow and level formulations. Seems to be where commissioners end up having to choose between which is better or which is worse, without really referring back, because it's unhelpful to refer back to some imaginary environment where we imagine what would the river be like, or what would the lakes be like in their natural state, because we just know that that's just not going to happen. I'm running a be pragmatic kind of argument, and I think that I think is in the Ratahi case there was a pragmatic way that you could, so says the court, you could approach that by looking at an environment that's unaffected by the scheme, and then understanding what changes the scheme makes to it. In our big scheme scenarios, that really just isn't available to us. So that's the approach that I think is practical and prudent.
So is it your submission to us that the flow regime that's occasioned by the structures is also the existing environment in terms of a reconsenting process?
Yes, the lawful flow regime. Yep. And bearing in mind another aspect of it is the fact that the lake level regime isn't something that's controlled under the RMA. So if you like, there's another layer in the case of the NPS, which is the regulatory or statutory overlay. So you've got the physical reality, you've also got a reality of the law that sits outside of the RMA, which is MTADA and the guidelines. And they mean that the environment has to be operated or is in a certain state. And so that's a unique aspect of the NPS, which doesn't, even in some of the other big schemes that you're familiar with, don't have that overlay. So it creates sort of a different kind of an environment.
Is it Meridian's position, though, that upon reconsenting, which is sometime in the future, that issues like residual flows, etc., can be revisited, or is it its position that they can't be revisited?
The position is that whatever the regime is that's becomes operative in the plan, will be the regime that has to be complied with for a controlled activity. So however that pans out through the next plan process, or subsequent plan process in terms of takes and discharges and flow fluctuations and residual flows and all that sort of stuff, to the extent that they're set out in an operative regime, the rule that Ms. White has proposed would speak to that regime and would say whatever that is, you've got to comply with it. The reservation of control would stop short of giving council the ability to effectively impose a different regime from what the plan says. So that's where you draw the line.
That's an issue that concerns me, because as a hearings panel at this stage, we have no idea what that flow regime may be through the FMU process, and it may not even get into that level of detail. It might not be so specific that it would guide the reconsenting process in that level of detail. See, what I'm trying to get at is that on the MR, the Waikato River System reconsenting process, the Tongariro Power Development Scheme reconsenting process, residual flows were assessed and amended, and generally greater residual flows were imposed for ecological and other reasons. And those operators accepted that as part and parcel of the reconsenting process, and it was based on proper science, etc. So what, perhaps to assist us, if you could give some thought to a rewording of Objective 10 that deals with the issue you've raised about the scheme being part of the existing environment, but doesn't give the impression that the existing flow regime is locked in forever. Because I think that would be the wrong message to send to everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we might have to go away and think about
it. Absolutely. I'm not asking you to do it now.
I'll have a go. No.
Put up your hearing and breath. And if you're able to do that, I don't know, would the end of this week be too quick, or would the end of next week be better?
I think probably the end of next week would be better, gives the team a chance to have a good think about it.
Yeah, and so in terms of what I've asked you to do, is it, are you clear on what I'm asking you to do?
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you.
And that's all the questions I had. We'll see if there are other questions for you on the legal submissions.
Yeah, just one clarification, really. You pick it up in 19 of your, and it's referred to again further over, and you've talked a lot about the mandatory power station, but you've actually got a second power station there as well. And I was wondering whether your discussion actually referred to the one, or does your discussion refer to the two?
Are you talking about Monowai?
Yes. Are you talking about them as individuals, or are you talking about as one scheme?
No, just talking about Manapouri. So Monowai is not a Meridian scheme.
It's
Pioneer Generation.
Okay. Yeah. So it's totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. And all that I would say is that in the regional policy statement, it does actually kind of differentiate between the two. So they're both mentioned, but the Manapouri scheme is recognised as being nationally significant. Yeah, and so it's sort of got a different, I suppose, level of significance.
Okay, but just you had the two there in the same sentence. I just want clarification on how you see or treated them in your discussion.
Yeah, so the rule that's proposed, the control activity rule that's proposed, is specific to the MPS. It doesn't cover Monowai as well.
Right. So MPS, because it's a bit hard, isn't it? Manapouri Power Station is MPS, not the NPS.
Yes, sorry about that. Yes. Poor diction.
It's fine. It took me a bit to work out going through what we were talking about. I thought you had a spelling mistake for
starting. I haven't got a Southland accent, so you probably can't understand me properly.
No, I've got it clear. Thank you, Mr. Hewitt.
No questions, thank you.
No questions, thanks.
And Mark.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to explore a little bit further. Mr. Christensen said that in regarding to specifying in Appendix E exceptions for critical infrastructure and how that might apply to other types of critical infrastructure as well. And I'm just not totally clear in my head around all of that. And so I'm just asking, as an alternative, if that didn't work out, hopefully it does, but maybe if it didn't work out, the main issue in relation to Appendix E for lake-fed streams relates to the presence of diddy, and that it grows pretty much in an uncontrolled way. We can't manage it, so wherever it occurs in lake-fed stream, lake outlet streams, it will exceed the standards there. So there's an alternative for Appendix E and lake fed streams, rather you don't have to change a whole lot. All you need to do is put in where it says about chlorophyll A shall not exceed 50 milligrams, etc. And then where it says diatoms, you could say excluding diddymo.
Excluding diddymo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that would really resolve the issue too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think, this is something you should ask Dr. James when he gives his evidence. Off the top of my head, I would say that may well deal with the dilemma issue. You'd also need to think about the flow on MCI and QMCI, because that, as I understand it, is the depression of those, of the diversity and so on, is caused by the dilemma as well. So it's a sort of a flow on effect there. And of course, that doesn't deal with the temperature issue that Dr. James raises. That's a different kind of issue. But at least I understand where you're coming from in terms of making an exception for Didymo.
Temperature is a tricky one on the Appendix E, actually, because a lot of lowland streams will exceed the guidelines simply because it's a hot day. And a lot of the low reaches of the Matara, for example, get up above the guidelines. Not often, but fairly often in the middle of summer, if we have 30 degree days and the water temperature can get up above the standard, and there's nothing we can do about that.
So. No. I think the point is it just seems a bit odd to have a standard which you can't meet.
Yeah. So they're only interim anyway, I would say. So anyway, that was one issue I wanted to raise there. And the other point that the chairman brought up about the flow regime, it might be possible in the future to have a different regime that was beneficial not only for the alignment but for the generating company as well, in terms of variable flows and that sort of thing. So fixing the existing flow into the future does seem to me to be fraught with difficulties. Anyway, we'll see what we can come up with. The other thing, it's probably a question for Andrew. I should have said, Mr. Chairman, sorry for the record, that I have had a lot to do with Andrew and Mark through the Wire Working Party.
Sorry, I don't know their names, so can we use these two names?
Sorry, Mr. Farabind and Dr. James. had a lot to do with them, so I'm sort of very familiar with the situation. Just for the record. This might be a question for Mr. Farabind rather than you, Mr. Christensen, about the ability for Meridian to undertake sort of peripheral activities such as removing gravel, which creates some dirty water, in a way that is really not different to any other activity that anybody else might undertake, and having them classified as special for Meridian or for the Wire seems to me to be a little bit unfair to everybody else, and I don't know whether you can respond to that or whether Mr. Farabind should.
I think that the Ms. White might have something to say about it too, but I think that the issue really is that these are activities which can and should be undertaken in a way which has minor or less than minor effects on the environment. So they're not big deal activities in that sense. And it just seems very odd that they're classified as non-complying activities in the plan. And I think that's where, from a planning point of view, that's the opportunity to actually make them discretionary, I think is what you're suggesting, Ms. White. And that's all. And so it's really just saying that these are activities which we can contemplate. We know that they're going to take place. They need to be managed appropriately, so you're not having messes of sediment racing around for ages and so on. So it's just making sure that we don't ascribe to them an activity status, which non-compliance is effectively saying we don't really make provision for this.
So, okay, so you're not asking for Meridian to be treated differently in relation to those sort of activities, is that right?
I don't think they're not special rules for Meridian. One. Perhaps you might have to revisit that question with Ms. White when she gives her evidence as to exactly what it is that she's proposing.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, so we can proceed to the witnesses now. Just to reiterate that we have carefully read the precept of evidence.